Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast that explores the creative and curious world of work through monologues and conversations with artists, creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and changemakers. If there's a question that today's guest inspires me to think about in my daily life, it's this: why should people care? Matt Wasterdowski is a travel writer who uses his curiosity and insatiable drive to discover Oregon's majestic places, people, and experiences. In this conversation, he talks about his latest travel guide, Moon, Columbia River Gorge, and Mount Hood, waterfalls and wildflowers, craft beer and wine, hiking and camping, and shares a few of his favorite moments in the research and writing phases of the project. There is something for everyone in this guide, from a neon sign museum and wine tasting to picnics on the Columbia River and apple orchards in Hood River and everything in between. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/564.
I think for me, being a writer, I think it makes, you know, surprise, surprise, I am so curious about story, you know, how we got here, why things are the way they are, that kind of thing. I'm about to release a travel guide to the Columbia River Gorge and Mount Hood. And as I've kind of gone through the book, as I kind of get ready to talk about it in public and that kind of thing, it brings back all of these memories of kind of things that I was really curious about that I got to learn while researching. You know, the Missoula floods thousands of years ago, you know, this lake in present day Montana is held back by a glacier, and then the glacier melts, massive floods all the way to the present day Oregon coast. That process repeats itself over thousands of years. That creates the Columbia River Gorge. I'm very curious about that. You know, Hood River sits at this really interesting place in the Cascades. It's the only sea level pass in the Cascades. And it is where the west winds and the east winds kind of collide, and it creates this weird kind of wind tunnel and has turned Hood River into the windsurfing capital of the world. Like, how does that happen? Why does that happen? So that's the kind of stuff I'm curious about, is kind of how did we get here and why are things the way they are?
Oh my gosh. That's beautifully stated. And like, you've alluded to a few types of stories, but are there like usual stories when you start to hear them, you're like, ah, yes, I'm going to like that story.
Natural history fascinates me for sure. Especially, you know, living in Oregon, being surrounded by forests and desert and river canyons and you name it, just the, you know, how Oregon was molded over the course of, you know, millions of years is really interesting to me. And then I love the kind of personal stories of, you know, I'm a travel writer, the people who, you know, open the businesses or create the museums, that kind of thing. You know, I think working on this Gorge book, I got to learn about, let's say, Keokawa Orchards on the Hood River Fruit Loop, which is just south of Hood River. Keokawa Orchards has like 150 varieties of apples and pears and other fruits. It was started by a Japanese immigrant back before World War II. And I got to learn about the history of Japanese farmers in the Hood River Valley pre-World War II, you know, how they got there, what life was like, what they did well, what happened when World War II happened, the aftermath of that. So I think kind of, you know, learning those stories about some of the places, the people who are responsible for the places we know and love today. What are their stories? What are, you know, what are they bringing to the table that's different than anyone else? That kind of thing. I get to learn that. And, you know, it doesn't take much. The hairs on my arm stand right up when that kind of thing happens. So it's a blast.
Nice. So you have a spidey sense.
A little bit.
So when you're out and about, I mean, obviously you're probably not shy to approach people, but when you walk up to someone, you know, what's your lead question? Is it like, tell me your story? Or is it something a little bit more subtle?
One of the big things that I try to do is to approach from a place of honest curiosity. I'm very quick to say, hey, I honestly don't know this. I'm asking because this is a genuine question. Mm-hmm. I would like to know more, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think when people see that there's a genuine interest and a genuine curiosity, they're quick to open up. And that's usually a good entryway into a conversation. I also try to sort of talk about my own experiences, and I'm not afraid to admit when I'm ignorant about something, you know, to say, hey, why is this the way it is? Or, you know, out in the Hood River Fruit Loop, it is one of the biggest apple growing regions in the, the state of Oregon, never mind the Pacific Northwest. I didn't know much about apples when I started. And so I would talk to some of these farmers and just say, like, what's the difference? Like, right now, I know this variety of apple is a little bit tart. This one's a little bit sweet, but like, what am I tasting? What's going on? So, you know, being open to that and being able to sort of acknowledge when I don't know something, be open to hearing the answers, I think really goes a long way with people. It puts them at ease. And, you know, who among us doesn't enjoy talking about things that we're experts at or knowledgeable about, right? Like,
right.
I give them an opportunity to sort of talk about what really matters to them, and they're usually happy to do so.
I love that question. What am I tasting here? I mean, I can understand that when it comes to beer or wine or even like cheese, but I never thought of it about an apple.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had no idea. There were so many varieties of apple. Same goes for pears. That was such a crazy learning experience with this particular guide, because I didn't know what I didn't know going into some of this work. So it was a really fun experience to get those perspectives. And, you know, in the heart of this region that is known for this production, it was a masterclass in agriculture. And I was happy to learn.
So when you're setting out on this journey of curiosity and discovery, you know, are you fearful? Are you excited? Are you anxious? Like what's going on inside?
I'd say more than anything, it's excitement, because I get to learn something new. Yeah. I think that's one thing I love about being a travel writer, is that I'm always learning new things, whether it is history, whether it's learning about the origin of a certain dish that I'm writing about, whether it's about craft beer, whatever the case may be. I look at it as an opportunity, because there is so much that I don't know. I feel like if I come into it anxious and I come into it a little bit nervous about, oh, I don't want someone to know that I'm really inexperienced or not knowledgeable, I can't have like an open and interesting dialogue with someone if I'm not fully present and open and honest about where I'm at. Yeah. And especially because like they can see right through my lack of knowledge if I try to fake it for even a second. Right. So I look at each of, you know, each interview, each interaction as an opportunity to learn more and kind of round out my knowledge of a certain area. So yeah, I think it's a blast. It's great to learn new things. I get to do that for a living. And then tell people about it. It's ridiculous in the best way possible.
I love that notion that people can see right through you when you're pretending, because it's just like, how many of us out there have wanted to believe that we can hide our ignorance?
And I think, you know, in the day-to-day, especially when we're talking really high level about something, we can. But when I am trying to communicate something to, whether it's hundreds or thousands of readers, I can't go very far before someone's going to find me out. You know, one other good example of this is in working on this book, I came into this not very knowledgeable about wine. I've never been a big wine drinker. I know there's red and there's white wine. That's about as far. I know Pinot Noir is big in Oregon, but that was about it. And I remember, I think it was Saturday, Sunday, last October, a friend and I went wine tasting out in the Hood River area. And we sit down in this tasting room. They offer these flights, and the tasting room manager, I haven't told her that I'm there for a book. I'm just there with a friend. He knows way more about wine than I do. And the tasting room manager pours the wine, and in my recollection, hovers right over the table, waiting to see what we think, how we like it, what we're tasting, all of this. And I almost immediately shut down, because I'm like, okay, this is a good red wine. I don't know what varietal it is. am I even using the word varietal correctly? I hope so. And so she's just like, how do you like it? And I was like, I like it. And she's like, yeah, did you get the notes of blah, blah, you know, cherry? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm just, I can feel myself just shutting down because I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. What am I doing here? This is the first of like three or four tasting rooms I'm supposed to visit this weekend. And I just felt so out of place. And so I just turned that around and you know, the tasting room manager, she's hanging out. I'm just like, okay, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know the first thing about what I'm tasting. I don't know where I'm at. Can I ask you about this? Just, I didn't tell her I was an author. Wow. I didn't tell her I was working on a book. I'm just like, I would, you know, you are the expert here. I am not. What can I learn from you? And that immediately, that shift in mindset of, oh, I don't have to be ashamed that I feel so out of place in this really swanky tasting room. You know, I shifted from that to, no, like, I don't know. This is a great opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
That changed everything. And she was super into it. She was super excited. And by the end of it, we're just having this great conversation about the Hood River Valley and the wine region out there and what it's like. And she's like, oh, it's like Sonoma in blue jeans. And, you know, this is such a great analogy that I think ended up working its way into the final book. But yeah, uh-huh. So just being open to it, it opens up so many avenues that I don't think I would have explored without that mindset.
Did her dynamic and energy shift when you made that shift?
It did. She was really excited. She could tell that I didn't know much and that I was open to what she was telling me and that I actually wanted to learn, that I wasn't there just to get drunk or whatever. And I think she was really, in my recollection, she was so excited to be like, okay, like there's no stupid question, which was very nice because I think I asked a lot of them, but, you know, she was very engaging, very, very thoughtful. She took a lot of, you know, she had several other tables, but she took a lot of time and was really, you know, excited to share that expertise. And I think the fact that she could tell I was genuinely curious, I wasn't just asking to make conversation, I think really helped.
Yeah. So when you're going to these places to write about them for a travel guide, like, what does that process look like in terms of disclosing that you're there to write about it?
I think it varies from place to place. I come from the old school journalism world where you don't really try to disclose this information ahead of time because it could alter the experience you have.
Got it.
I try to put that part of it on the back burner. If someone asks, I will be honest. You know, I had an experience last summer where I was taking a tour of a museum and the person I was touring with was like, wow, you ask a lot of really good questions. And I was like, oh, thanks. I'm a writer. This is my job. So that was kind of fun. There are times where I do mention that I'm a writer because maybe by telling, you know, say reaching out ahead of time and saying, hey, I'm a writer. I'd love to include this in the book. Can I talk to like the owner or can I talk to the chef? Mm-hmm. Being able to kind of have that in can help me understand that business or that experience better. So most of the time I don't say too much. I just kind of keep to myself and have a good time. But there are times where it definitely comes in handy to disclose who I am, what I'm doing. And that helps me kind of get kind of a behind the scenes, richer experience that I can hopefully use to inform readers.
Yeah. That's funny. As you're describing this journey, I was thinking about a book by a former New York Times food critic who came up with like outfits and disguises in order to be able to be anonymous.
Yeah. A lot of food critics have strategies for how to get tables or how to fly under the radar. It's not easy. Well, it's easy for me. I being a food critic in New York City of all places, probably it's a bit of a tougher process.
Speaking of not easy, I mean, a travel guide in the midst of a global pandemic. I mean, how do you do that?
Oh my God. Woo. How much time do you have? This is a two-parter, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So six episode series.
AKA Matt's therapy. It was far and away the hardest thing I've ever had to do as a travel writer. I have a pretty low risk tolerance, so I was very shy about venturing out in public, and I tried to be very thoughtful about when I did so. For a little bit of context for this particular guide, I was awarded the guide in February of 2020.
Oh, wow.
And at that point, I remember thinking, okay, this COVID thing, this coronavirus thing, you know, we've had other diseases that have kind of come and gone. We've been able to keep a lid on them. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. You know, that weekend I was actually at a very large food and wine festival in Seattle, in very crowded indoor buildings, which now just feels insane.
I know, right?
Oh my goodness. But yeah, so I was awarded the guide at the end of February. And then it wasn't until April that I signed the contract. And my publisher had said, you know, do you want to push this back? Do you want to work on it right now? Do you want to cancel the project altogether? Mm-hmm. And I said, no. Like at the time, in my naivete, optimism, whatever you want to call it, was like, we'll flatten the curve. We'll have a few cases of COVID here and there. It'll be fine. Not a problem. I was sure that this was a flash in the pan. So I was like, yeah, of course. And over the next few months, you know, the historic Columbia River Highway, the biggest, you know, one of the most scenic drives in all of America, cuts right through the Columbia River Gorge. For most of the summer, it was open only to residents. They had checkpoints where they looked at your driver's license before letting you through. Restaurants were scraping together to-go menus. Mm-hmm. Museums and attractions were closed. Out parks, you know, a lot of parks. You know, now we know the risk of outdoor spread is really low. But there in those earliest days, we didn't know. So mm-hmm. parks were closed all over the place. So when you can't really go to restaurants, parks are closed, travel restrictions are in place, your main highways are closed, it makes it hard to research a guidebook, to say the least. So
you can't get like a little press hat and be like, ha-ha.
I know. I could have told them that, like, I'm writing about the pandemic. Maybe they would have let me through. But yeah, no, it was tough. But you know, and having that low risk tolerance, I was really shy. You know, I didn't want to eat indoors at restaurants, even when they offered limited capacity. So I would go on off hours, like maybe I would go really early for breakfast at like 8 a.m. if that was offered, or maybe I would go to lunch at like 3 p.m., kind of the downtime. I tried to avoid weekend visits, if at all possible, to the gorge and the Mount Hood areas. Try to do, you know, weekday trips as much as possible, try and get writing done on the weekends, mm-hmm. and just try to navigate all that uncertainty. You know, at various points, restaurants couldn't have indoor seating. Then they could have, you know, maybe 10% or 20%. Then maybe it would get bumped up to 50%. But by November, as I was kind of working on the last chapter, restaurants in Oregon were completely shut down for indoor dining again. So it was a real, you know, just a never-ending Tetris board of trying to figure out what's open, what's closed, you know. And then you had businesses that closed temporarily during the pandemic that you were like, okay, so I can't visit them, but I know I like them. I hope they come back. Will they come back? I don't know. I have to make a judgment call. And then businesses that I had written about closed as the pandemic went on. It was just trying to keep track of, you know, in a lot of ways, it felt like watching, you know, 300 TVs in my living room at once on 300 different channels. Oh, wow. Just trying to keep track of, yeah, what's open, what's closed, what are capacity limits, what are case counts looking like, what's crowded. You know, there were a couple times where I'd be in Hood River on a weekday, and it was as packed as I've ever seen it. So, wow. So yeah, to try and just navigate all that, and again, low risk tolerance. So it was just, you know, a low level, you know, anxiety the whole time I worked on the guide. So that was definitely tough. I don't want to try and say, oh, hey, you know, no big deal. Yeah, I did, you know, whatever. Cause it was a big deal. But at the same time, I managed to still have a lot of really cool experiences that I was really grateful for and that I'm excited to share with readers. And, So, yeah. So, you know, there were definite moments of joy interspersed with a lot of anxiety.
Well, and I imagine too, it's like you're writing a guide for 2021, but you want there to be some shelf life to it. You know, you want it to be accessible in 5 years for the most part, you know? So, I mean, navigating that sounds incredibly challenging.
Yeah. yeah, it was, we kind of had a sense as the process went on that COVID would be with us well after the book's publication. So we made a lot of efforts to kind of up the outdoor recreation opportunities. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you're writing about the Columbia River Gorge, it's hard not to, but you know, I included some extra, you know, maybe some parks that, you know, in lieu of some other indoor opportunities so that people could really enjoy that. We had a short half page call out that basically offers tips and resources for traveling in the era of COVID. Mm-hmm. And then with some of the outdoor opportunities we included, we wanted to say, oh, hey, is there a bathroom at the trailhead or at this park? Is there drinking water available? That way people could be a little bit more self-sufficient and be safe. And honestly, I think one of the benefits of that we didn't really think about at the time is that I think that stuff is pretty evergreen. Like even without a pandemic, do I want to know if a certain hiking trail has a bathroom at the trailhead? Yeah, absolutely. That's great. So some of that stuff that was included is kind of a nod to the COVID pandemic or in response to everything that's, you know, still going on. I think it'll end up having a life of its own as people, you know, it's just useful information no matter the situation. So I'm excited about that.
That's awesome. Yeah. You said something curious earlier. You said you were awarded the guide. Like what goes into getting to be able to write a guide like this?
Yeah. So, this was my second guidebook with Moon Travel Guides. I'm currently working on my third.
Ooh, I was going to say, you said past tense. Nice. Yeah.
it's so funny because I'm currently working on the first chapter for the next guide while promoting my second guide. And it's, I don't know whether to use past tense or present tense at all anymore, but,
good for you, man. That's awesome.
Thank you. I'm really excited. I remember when I first started as a travel writer in 2017, I was like, well, I hope I get to write a travel guide by the time I'm like 50, and I will have finished my third by the time I turn 40, which is pretty incredible. That's extraordinarily lucky. So happy. So I had, you know, after the first guide, I had that existing relationship with Moon, and one of the editors on the acquisitions team there reached out to me in December of 2019. Said, we would like to publish a Columbia River Gorge and Mount Hood guide. Are you interested? You know, and once I picked myself up off the floor from passing out because of excitement, I said, yes, absolutely, not a doubt. And so I wrote a proposal over the course of most of December. Then in early January, I submitted that, made a few revisions. And the proposal, I should say, it's the document where you say, here are the chapters that we'll include in the guide. Here are the sections within each chapter, and here's what we want to focus on. Here's what will make my guide different than every other guide that's out there. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of stuff. So it was a big undertaking even before writing the book. So I turned that in January, made some edits to that. And then in February, they presented it to the proposal committee, who gives the ultimate green light to whatever gets written. So, submitted that proposal and heard back at the end of February and then started work in April.
That's cool. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's interesting. I understand the outline and the sections and really initializing that research that's going to show what goes into the guide. But I'm also fascinated with the desire to be like, here's how it's going to be different. Like it's so intriguing.
And I think that's one thing that I really appreciate about that part of the process is because, you know, there is no shortage of ink, digital and otherwise, that has been spilled on the Columbia River Gorge in Mount Hood. You have guidebooks, you have visitor guides, you have blog posts, you have podcasts, you name it. Mm-hmm. So being able to sort of, you know, step back and take a look at the landscape and sort of say, you know, how does the world need another gorge guide? And if so, what's missing? Mm-hmm. And I think a big part of that was the outdoor recreation for me. It's so impossible to write about the Columbia River Gorge and Mount Hood without talking about the outdoor recreation. It's, you know, not everyone is super outdoorsy, but whether you are picnicking in a park or staying in a yurt or what, just taking pictures of Mount Hood from your picnic table, you are probably going to spend some time in the outdoors. So we really tried to play that part, you know, that part of it up and give people the, not just the broad information on what to do, but more in-depth information on the actionable steps that people could take to enjoy that. Oh, so Hood River, cool. You know, for instance, is the windsurfing capital of the world. There are kiteboarding, kite surfing, windsurfing instructors all over the waterfront. So instead of just saying that, hey, you can try your hand at windsurfing or kiteboarding, we were able to say, here are some of the outfitters that you can talk with. Here's what you should know. You know, for this activity, you can usually get on the water after one or two lessons. For this activity, you'll want to spend a week or so getting the hang of it before getting on the water. Mm. So being able to sort of offer that sort of actionable information where people didn't have to just take a guess or just hear, oh, that sounds fun, and leave it at that.
Right.
So that was a big part in giving people the opportunity to engage with these activities that the Gorge and Mount Hood are really known for.
Yeah, I love that. As someone who has traveled to Hood River to do kiteboarding lessons, I'm so glad that you explain how to do it and the process, because sometimes the websites that you find don't give you all of the details that you're hoping for.
No, they do not. No, and you know, it's what's the season of each outfitter, and how many lessons do they offer, and who are they geared toward? What do lessons include? All of that information is so good to include because it helps people make a more informed decision. So
Right. Yeah,
it's fun. It's a lot of research. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of emails. It's a lot of phone calls. But, you know, I think ultimately when readers pick up the guide, they'll be able to see that a lot went into the book, and they'll be able to feel more confident knowing that we're not just sending someone into the region unprepared.
Right. Any chapters on rock climbing naked?
Not naked. That might be in the second edition. But
isn't that Rooster Rock?
Rooster Rock. Yeah. Okay. So Rooster Rock is in the guide. It is. Yes. Is I think one of only two nude beaches anywhere in Oregon. And gave people tips for if you want to, you know, if you head this way, you'll go to the nude beach. If you head this way, you'll go to the clothing required beach, and let people make the decision that's right for them.
That's right. That's an incredible distinction that might not be advertised on the trail. So
exactly.
Mommy, what's that?
Yeah. And I don't remember how, but I was very careful about, you know, saying why it was named Rooster Rock. That was a very delicate dance, but, you know, at the same time, it's a very popular state park, you know, and I learned so much about it because I went into this guide like, okay, Rooster Rock, nude beach. Great. Okay. Whatever. And then it was like, oh, they also have paddling. There's swimming. There's disc golf. There's picnic tables right on the Columbia River. There's all kinds of fun stuff to do there. So even that was like, oh, so yeah, the nude beach is there. The distinctive rock is likewise there. But, you know, if you want to head out for the day and keep your clothes on, there's plenty more to do at that park. So that was another one of those things that I was really excited to stumble upon.
That's really cool. Because what I love about that too is like, it's so easy to judge things on the surface, but if you just spend a little time exploring and being curious, and have a great time.
Exactly. Yeah. Just creates a whole different experience, which is an absolute blast.
As you're exploring this guide and you're searching out these stories of different locations, what are some of your favorite moments that showed up in the guide?
Yeah, I think the first one that comes to mind is, let's see, I think it was last August. I wanted to take a tour of the National Neon Sign Museum in the Dalles. Little known fact, there is a museum in the Dalles, and it's in an old Elks temple. And this guy, David Benko, he has a private collection of something like 300 signs. Oh, and he worked out a deal with the city of the Dalles, and he moved into this converted Elks temple and opened a museum that showcases a few dozen of his neon signs at any given time.
Wow.
So I knew I was interested in visiting. They had capacity restrictions, so they were offering guided tours by appointment only. So I signed up for a tour, and when I showed up, I was the only person on the tour. So I got, and David, the owner, was leading the tour. Okay. So I enjoyed a private tour of this really unreal museum with the owner. And he is just absolutely geeking out about the history of neon, some of the technology they used before neon, some of the pieces that he acquired that have some real historical significance, and how he got that. You know, I think he had one piece that he had to fly back from France. And you can imagine trying to keep a piece of glass together on a flight, you know, a flight halfway around the world. It doesn't sound easy, you know. And he's telling me about the different pieces and what they represent, some of the eras in American history, and how the style of neon evolved, that kind of thing. And it was just, you know, I had this private audience with this, you know, incredibly passionate museum owner. And that was one of those things where I came away just feeling so inspired and so excited. I knew that I would be interested in the museum. I'm a history geek. I've heard good things. It sounded fun, but I wasn't ready for that experience of just being able to sort of sit at the feet of this guy who has forgotten more about this subject than I'll ever know. So that was one of those experiences that really just stood out to me, is just like, oh my gosh, like, how did I get so lucky to have this experience? This is so much fun.
So when you're having those moments, whether it's with the taste manager or wine taste manager, or
tasting room manager,
tasting room manager, and then the guy leading the neon museum, you know, like, how do you bring that energy and that passion and that excitement into the writing that you end up doing?
So it can be tough with a guidebook, because the opportunities for really showing off that style can be a little bit few and far between, because you are, by including something in the guide, you are saying this is worth visiting. Mm-hmm. And then you have so much information to convey and so little time to do it. I even think, you know, at one point in the process, my editor called the word count of the guide, quote, concerning, which, I understand that it was not her favorite thing to tell me, but I took as the highest compliment, because it meant that I was sharing a lot of fun stuff I was excited about. But I think the biggest thing that I try to do is think about what about this experience excited me. Not just does this restaurant have really good food, but like, is this the only restaurant in town that does this cuisine? What do they do differently? Why is it so good? And I, you know, with the museum, it's like, where else in the Pacific Northwest are you going to find a museum with a few dozen neon signs, you know? And how often are you going to get a private tour with the curator? You know, that's one of those times where I didn't mention I was a writer. He didn't know me from, you know, someone passing on the street. Mm-hmm. And he was just as excited to talk about it. So I think the big thing is thinking about why I'm so excited. What about that experience is resonating with me? And sort of answering, you know, the question of why should people care? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of, you know, maybe good wineries in the Columbia River Gorge, for instance, but how many of them are using grapes grown in the gorge, or how many of them have these really scenic tasting rooms, or, you know, they have a really funky, fun atmosphere, whatever the case may be. Being able to sort of tap into that, not just getting excited, but stopping to sort of interrogate myself and say, Matt, why are you excited? Mm-hmm. And then helps me translate that for readers. Yeah. I hope anyway.
I love that, because not only are you being externally curious, but then you turn that curiosity back onto you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a never ending loop. It's a Mobius strip of curiosity, my friend.
I like that. And now that Facebook changed their name to Meta, we can't use that phrase anymore without paying them money.
Oh, dang it. You're right, aren't you? Yeah. I don't make enough as a travel writer to pay them. So I'll have to just find a new phrase.
You know, it is interesting though, as you start telling the stories that don't show up in the guide, do you have plans for creating additional resources for people who want to hear these things? Because you're just a born storyteller.
Well, thank you. Sometimes I will pitch these ideas as articles to certain publications. Mm-hmm. So that is one outlet. I'm also currently working on a website where I'm able to sort of tell some of these stories, take people behind the scenes a little bit. I'm still working on that. It's very early in the process, but yeah, it hit one of those points where I just said, you know, I have all of these experiences that can't make it into the book. So I'd love to have another outlet to be able to do that. And if I can't, you know, if a certain publication doesn't accept a pitch, then I'll just create that outlet myself.
Yeah.
So working on a website, working on another project that might be a self-published book. It might be an ebook. I don't know. It's still pretty early, but I'm pretty excited about that. And then also, this is going to sound really cliche, but it's also true. I love sharing my enthusiasm on social media, like Instagram. Yeah. You know, I just got back from a 2-week trip up and down the Oregon coast. And one thing I kept noticing over and over and over again is, you know, the people who have been on the front line of, you know, the service industry through this whole pandemic, there are a lot of now hiring signs on the coast right now, as there are everywhere. Not all of them are still there, but the ones who have stuck it out are the ones who are there. It was just like, these people do so much great work for us, and they make sure that we get to have these really awesome experiences wherever we go and whatever we do. So I just posted a caption about just how appreciative I am of just the countless hours that go into making sure travelers have a great time. And that was about the Oregon coast, but the same can be said of the gorge. The same can be said of Mount Hood, you name it.
Yeah. Thank you for spreading enthusiasm and positivity on social media.
it's a lonely job, but somebody's got to do it.
So true.
Yeah. Good Lord. But yeah, I try.
Well, you do a good job, sir.
Thank you.
Well, what is the name of the guide and when does it come out?
Yeah, so it's Moon Columbia River Gorge, Mount Hood. Maybe not the most evocative title, but you know what you're going to get. so named because it's coming out through Moon Travel Guides. That's the publisher. It's coming out November 16th, 2021. So I think a week from when this particular episode drops. And if people want to pre-order, obviously, you can do so through Amazon. That is probably the quickest way to get it into your hands. But I've also been advocating for people to pre-order through bookshop.org, which I think sprouted up in the wake of the pandemic. And it basically lets you purchase a book through your favorite independent bookseller in a way that supports them, but through the bookshop.org interface, I think is kind of how it works.
That's
cool. So, you know, independent bookshops were hit hard early in the pandemic, but they do, you know, the people who run those stores pour their heart and soul into it. And if I can find some small way to show them some much deserved love, then I'm happy to do so.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, seeing as you're an author and you like to write books, do you have a favorite book, podcast, or resource right now that's blowing your mind?
Yeah, funny enough, I haven't been reading as much lately, but having been on the road a lot, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. And the one that I am just absolutely in love with right now is the Maintenance Phase podcast. I'm a bigger guy myself, and I have been as long as I can remember. And I've always had a really complicated relationship with my own body and, you know, the perceptions of others, how the world sees me, that kind of thing. And it does such an amazing job of kind of looking at society's relationship with weight loss and wellness. And it puts it into a really fascinating context that we just don't hear about. You know, they've done some episodes recently on the body mass index and how we got saddled with BMI and how it's such an imperfect vessel for measuring health, but we see it as the be all end all of how someone should be, you know, living their lives. You know, they've done some really insightful episodes on, you know, wellness influencers and authors who have contributed often negatively to the discourse and some of the impacts of what they have to say, you know, what those impacts are, and, you know, people who maybe don't see themselves in a certain mold. So, you know, it's such a great podcast because, you know, personally I feel seen, but I'm also learning a ton about, you know, the broader societal relationship between weight and wellness and health and what it all means and what it all looks like for all of us. And so, yeah, every single episode I come away learning something new. I feel a little bit smarter and I feel a bit more seen, which is always a good thing.
That is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Well, Matt, thank you for just sharing your positivity, your enthusiasm for the natural world and for people. I always enjoy talking with you. I learn so much and I'm just grateful for you and what you do. And I'm glad to call you friend.
Dude, it goes both ways. I appreciate being able to have these conversations. You continue, you know, I think we've known each other for maybe a little over a decade now, and you still continue to inspire me every, you know, with every episode, with every email, with every conversation. So I really appreciate that. And can I just say one last thing to mm-hmm. to the listener?
Sure.
You can feel free to cut this out by all means, but I would feel really remiss if I didn't mention this. You know, the service workers have been through hell every day of this pandemic. Park rangers, same deal. You know, a lot of people have been on the front lines to make sure that as we travel, whether it's traveling down the street to grab dinner from our favorite restaurant, or we travel to a region to get away for the weekend, or another state, or even another country, people have worked tirelessly, long hours, lots of overtime. And it's been a really turbulent time for everyone in that industry right now. You know, no one is canceling flights, closing down early, altering reservations because they want to make life more difficult for anyone, you know? So I just want to say, please, as you travel again, whether it's traveling down the street or across the country this season and beyond, please be open to changes in plans. Tip well whenever you can. Say thank you to your servers and desk clerks. They don't hear that often enough, and they deserve every ounce of gratitude, patience, and kindness that we can share right now and every day, really. But they've had a real slog of it over the past, you know, 20 months now. And I think I just wanted to say that it's really, I hope that people are able to keep that in mind as they start getting back out into the world.
As someone who absolutely loves the Columbia River Gorge, I honestly consider it my happy place. I cannot wait for this guide. I am looking forward to seeing all of the new places that I can travel to this spring and summer, and I would encourage you to buy it today. And don't forget, as Matt mentioned, use bookshop.org to not only buy the book to support Matt, but to also support independent bookstores. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.